Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week we will review the Mortuary Collection. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we're going to talk about what we've been watching this week. I watched a little movie. We were going to talk about New Mutants.
Ooh.
Which we did some speaking about, you weren't a fan of it?
Yeah, we did. We did talk a little about this before we started. And if you'd like to hear that footage, please go to our Patreon. So,
yeah.
So,
yeah, go ahead and
we'll make one.
Yeah, show us how to make one for us and then find people.
Also, for it. Explain to us how NFTs work. And cryptocurrency, yeah. Please.
We're all about it.
The New Mutants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say I really liked it. I think.
Oh, you did.
I did.
Good. I'm glad somebody did.
I really liked it, and I get it. No, I get it. I see the problems. I see them. Slow paced, plot scaled down to the point of basically being like, not very like, there's nothing really like threatening going on. There's nothing like, there's no big stakes in the plot. You know what I mean? There's no like world ending event. It's just about them, getting out of the freaking hospital or whatever where they're being held at, which is sort of slowly established. But damn it, I really liked it. I thought it was really interesting. I really did.
You see, I rather enjoyed the pacing. I actually really liked like these relationships that were being built.
Mm-hmm.
I will say these young lovers, I feel, are moving a little too fast, but they'll learn.
Yeah.
It was when the action really picked up at the end where I was like, this is getting kind of, I just didn't like it. I started getting like frustrated and a little bit like bored and.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I completely agree. Like the first half of this, the movie where they're, I really like that they spent a lot of time setting up characters. Like, and yeah, I really thought that, cool. That, you know, there's a relationship between Wolfbane and Dawnstar. Morningstar, yeah. Sorry. And then, and I thought they did a really good job of kind of laying it out like a traditional love story. I thought they were going to like pull the rug on them. You know what I mean? There would be like some sort of conflict, but it really is just them falling in love through the movie, which I thought was a really unique, fresh take on anything like that. Cause by the end of this movie, they're like holding hands and walking out of the, whatever the hell they're, you know, the asylum or whatever, which I thought was like, man, this is awesome. Unique. No other like bit, you know, like quote unquote superhero movie has anything close to this. So I give it props for that.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I mean, I liked all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted more explanation as to why. What's her name? Taylor Joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted more reasoning behind her attitude, I guess, because I don't know, and it has to do with the ending again. Like, there's something that didn't like flow very well with me for that character, even though I really enjoyed all the characters. It was like, I think that's going to be the same problem I have with each of the characters. It's just like the end tries to do like this flip real quick so they can all be heroes, and it's like, okay, that you haven't been establishing this, so
yeah.
but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I think she was, I like the idea of the character. Like, she's kind of, I don't know, just a mean individual, basically, to yeah, everybody, right?
Mean-spirited, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, she still seemed like she was a part of the group, even though she, like, actively rejected them, you know what I mean? You know, like, pushed them away and stuff. She
yeah, I mean, yeah, she was a super fucking mean to Morningstar.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she's like, nah, she's cool, you know?
Yeah, she just changed on it.
No,
yeah.
She is the best. Like, I don't know. Yeah. And I did like that other guy. I kind of wish... I mean, it's not terribly important. They were always kind of like secondary characters, but I was like curious about the other guys too. The dude from... Stranger Things, right? And the other guy.
Yeah, Cannonball and Sunspot.
The, like, handsome dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunspot is actually...
Oh, shit. They're Cannonball and Sunspot. I don't know. Yeah. I purposely, like, knew... I knew nothing about it just enough to be like, I don't know if I really care about this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But now that you're mentioning all the names, I'm like, oh, that's fucking cool.
Yeah. Sunspot is a fan favorite character.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I wasn't crazy about, like, Cannonball. I mean, what did... The southern accent was a little iffy, but for me, but I'm
gonna say all the accents were a little iffy, but yeah,
I think a lot, I reading the you know, the critics and reading, you know, fan reaction, like a lot of people just immediately dismissed this movie. So going in, I was thinking, oh man, this movie's gonna be terrible. This is gonna be like Dark Phoenix terrible type movie, which I didn't think it was bad either. Okay. Which I didn't think it was bad.
Yeah.
And this movie, I think this movie has something, like, it definitely is as a smaller movie. It focuses on its characters.
Right.
And it's just about them getting out. Like, there's no, like I said, like, there's no, like, world ending thing. They're not trying to, like, save anybody but themselves. They're just trying to get free so they can live whatever life they're going to have. You know what I mean? Which I thought was... small, and I think that's done on purpose, because maybe because the budget wasn't there, or there's a lot of stuff that's probably scaled down for the movie, and I think you feel some of that, you know.
Yeah, I would say so.
But yeah. But overall, I really liked it. I think it's an underrated movie.
Oh yeah, okay. I was gonna say, compared to Dark Phoenix, though, I felt like Dark Phoenix was like consistently just not hitting the mark, and this one for me was hitting the mark for a little while, and then I don't know. Yeah, again, the final act of this was very disappointing.
Yeah. Speaking of final acts, we're nearing the end of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is the next.
Yeah, wing guy and the arm dude.
Yeah, one arm and wing guy.
Well, what else could this be called? Hey, two characters and actors that don't hate each other finally got their own spin-off.
Yeah.
Because apparently they're like best buds.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I guess in Civil War, they had a couple of scenes, a couple of comedic scenes, and they decided to build like a 6-episode series out of it on Disney Plus.
Actually, I saw this YouTube video that just surfaced. I mean, I don't know if it just surfaced, but people have been sharing it. And it's at, like, a Comic-Con, and they're asking, like, the panel of people, and Kevin Feige's there, too. And the question was, like, hey, we're just wondering, like, because of the relationship, when are we going to get our buddy-buddy cop show with Falcon and the Winter Soldier? And they cut to Kevin Feige, and he's just, like, beaming, like, oh, I don't know. And this is, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that was the reason why, but it kind of feels like, oh, I didn't think about that.
Could be how they started thinking about the show.
Yeah. It's like, why not, right? I was gonna say, if they had just fucking condensed like the first 4 episodes into something else, right? Because this would be like the perfect midway point episode.
Yeah. You know?
Because this last episode, I was like, dude, where has this show fucking been? Like, this is what I was like wanting to see. This is great.
Yeah, yeah. And the last episode was the fifth one, it definitely is a slower paced one. They definitely spent a lot of time with the characters after the events of the last, whatever, the previous episode. The fallout of it is like, you know, what happens to the John Walker as Captain America. he ends up killing somebody, and then it's sort of the fallout of that. And they spend a lot of time like setting up, you know, like why Falcon didn't take the shield, why Bucky cares about the shield, and why, you know, and then the loss of the shield by John himself, which I thought were really cool. It was really small, like scale stuff. It was good.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool.
It was so good. I mean, I know you get introduced to one of the previous super soldier people.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I'm going to forget his name, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that whole thing, and then like, this was just a great episode. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like this was the show I was expecting the entire time.
Yeah, and
now there's only one more episode.
There's only one more episode. Yeah, I really like that they're focusing on the legacy of Captain America. You know what I mean? Like what that means, and like what it means to different people, right? What it means to Falcon being a black male, you know what I mean, or Sebastian Stan being a man at a time. And you know, I think they did a really good job of like honing and like digging out a lot of those stories. And then they introduced what is his name, Bradley, what's his Isaiah Bradley, something like that.
Oh yes, Isaiah Bradley.
And they have a nice little conversation about what it means too. And I really like that they're like expanding and building on the like mythology of him. So really good episode. And you know, the more I've seen this episode, the show, Anthony Mackie as the Falcon has really grown on me. Like I during the movies, he was kind of take it or leave it. Like it didn't really like mean very much, you know.
Because they didn't give him anything.
True.
You know?
Yeah. Like he was a sidekick.
He had something in Captain America: The First Avenger, I think. Like you know, when he gets introduced, where you get like some sort of thing from it, and it was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But I'm an Anthony Mackie fanboy. I'm also a Sebastian Stan fanboy. So, you know, I'm like, I'm gonna like whatever they're in.
Yeah, and I think they've did a really good job of building him up to eventually like take the shield and like legitimize it in some way, you know. And I think the one character I feel like gets left out a little bit is Bucky. I feel like he doesn't really have very much to his storyline is flat, I think, overall. So and of course now we're hitting into the last episode. I'm really curious about where they're going to end it. I don't think this is going to be a continuing series. This is another one of those like WandaVision things where I think it's going to end and then they're going to move on to whatever. The next thing is, which is what, Loki, which looks amazing. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So far, I've been impressed.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only reason Bucky's there is so he can bring in Daniel Brühl Zemo, just have that there. And I don't know. I guess his character's kind of tough because if you focus too much on him, it's just going to be too, like, woe is me the entire time. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of this is what the show is finally really good and we only get one more episode.
Yeah. This show, like it had to really find its feet. You know what I mean? There's always something interesting, but it was always kind of flat on some certain levels. So,
let's
see. Hopefully they can wrap it all up. I have a feeling they won't. I think we're going to be a little like underwhelmed, but we'll see. We'll see.
Well, because I would imagine, I mean, I guess they can do whatever they want, but we're finally going to get, what was U.S. Agent's other name? His like first name?
I don't remember.
Shit. I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, John Walker was like somebody else before he became U.S. Agent, which he's not. What, he's not necessarily a bad guy, but he's not a good guy. He's just, because of the serum, he's just all fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they introduce Julia Dreyfus as...
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot about that. But that was really cool, though. Yeah.
As, what's her name?
Madam Hydra.
Madam Hydra. Well, yeah, that's the thing in the comics. Well, I don't know. This might spoil stuff for people, but she pretends to be an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, she was a double agent for Hydra, but she's actually like a part of this like third party like agency like that too, that had been spying on these two other agencies or whatever.
Yeah, I think she's either Madam Hydra or the Power Broker. Those are kind of like the I think it would make more sense if she was the power broker, because we haven't seen any other hint or clue who that might be. So I'm assuming it might be her. Just, or it could be Madame Hydra. I don't know. But I know that they're planning on keeping her around on the show. She's going to play like a significant villain character.
Is she going to play a blind lawyer?
Yeah.
That, I mean, it sounds like I'm calling her Daredevil. But no, is she going to play a blind lawyer who pretends to be pregnant just to win court cases? Bring back Arrested Development.
No, don't. Don't.
No, don't. Yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot what happened. Never mind. Please,
no. They tried. They tried.
They tried twice.
Yeah. No.
Which leads into our movie of the week.
Yeah. No.
Oh, no. There's some pregnancy stuff.
Oh, yeah. That definitely reminds me that we got another ad break.
Hurry, hurry. The Big Father Goose sale is on. We've got cribs of all shapes, colors, and sizes. We've got cribs that look like the sun, moon, and stars. We've got some that look like race cars. Cribs that are 10 feet tall for those fast growers. Some that are aquariums for those amphibious gooey cuties. Some that are made from real prison cells for those troublemaking darlings. We've even got some lined with lavender to keep those cute little toots smelling as fresh as spring. And as always, we guarantee a sturdy American-built crib that will leave you satisfied.
Russ, I wouldn't put my name on it, punk!
Get your gooseneck crib today!
Wait. Was that... Okay. So is that what he sounds like? That like freaking split second thing? Is that Jimmy Gooseneck? Is that the same? Where did you find these videos again?
Yartel. Found them at Yartel.
Okay.
I bought like 100 of them. So it's like I'm slowly transferring what I can.
Oh, okay. 100. Holy shit. That's a lot.
What can I say? When I like a deal, I get a deal, you know? Like
yeah, I know. It's just like I've been to your apartment. Where are you storing all this? Did you finally get rid of your 300 tapes that you got from working sets?
Yeah, it's all gone. Both closets. We're not all my closets have the tapes. All the clothes are everywhere. We have clothes are in the kitchen now. And
Jimmy Gooseneck fucking advertisement.
It's important work. It's really important work I have to do.
You don't think this guy's still alive yet, right? I mean, is he? He can't be alive. Well, maybe. I don't know. What the hell am I talking about? He could be alive.
Huh. I don't know. Maybe. I never thought to check. You can Google him.
But as far as, I mean, I'm not planning on having any children, but the crypts sound pretty good.
Yeah.
Say the prison one sounds the best, actually.
Yeah. All right. John, you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please. Oh, yeah. I sure do. Got 5 of them.
Yeah, 5. Let's do it.
And I feel like my number one pick, which it's gotta be the number one, is either gonna be a copyright issue, but we'll cross that bridge.
Try to sue us. Just try.
No, I need to keep my $20. Okay, coming in at number 5 for the mortuary collection. Young person lies on application.
Yeah,
that's what I took away from it.
It's really a moral story of putting falsifying stuff on applications.
Yeah, this whole story is about lying and cheating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Coming in at number 4, I have late 50s hipsters must die. That's some really... If it wasn't for one of the stories, I know this is a bit of a spoiler, I was still trying to guess what... If it was one of those movies that was like, oh, it's an ambiguous time, but it's like set 50s style. I don't know. You've seen those movies, right?
Yeah.
Coming in at number 3, Rejected Goosebumps stories involve dicks. So there's a lot of dickheads in this movie. And a dickhead.
Yeah.
Coming in at number two, I have Mortician has great sex stories.
Yeah. There really is porn for everybody.
Yeah. What is it? Rule 34? Or what is the internet?
Yeah.
I don't know. And coming in at number one, I have There Can Be Only One.
Ah.
Bam.
Nice. All awesome.
Because he's like, are you ready, kids? Fuck you, Duncan MacLeod.
So the Mortuary Collection. What's your feeling on anthology series? Just like a general thought.
They're kind of my favorite. They're kind of my because at least if you're not really digging one thing, there's always something else.
Mm-hmm.
But some of my favorite films are anthology series, i.e. Creepshow, right? The Twilight Zone movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I got. I don't know. I can't think of any more. I really like anthology movies. Oh, like the VHS series I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. I just like it.
Same. Yeah.
And this movie, I thoroughly enjoyed. I could see the influences everywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all my favorite influences. And anything that's screaming like fucking Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone, you know, Goosebumps. You know, it had like a Sabrina the Teenage Witch vibe for me too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was just the way it was shot. It was just great. Because it also plays, like I was saying, very Goosebumpsy, because everything's very like 50 style, like Twilight Zone type of like writing and acting, I guess. But then, you know, like somebody, a dick explodes or something. You
know? Yeah. It's a very like kind of, there's definitely like a heavy like fantasy horror, dark comedy vibe to it.
Yeah.
So, same. I love anthology horror stories, like you mentioned, like Creepshow. One of my personal favorites, like Body Bags or
Body Bags,
Trick or Treat, yeah. Stuff like that.
Trick or Treat, fuck yeah.
Yeah, no, there's some really good stuff. So, and the same thing like you said, if you're not really into one story, there's always like something else coming up that, you know, has that may catch your interest. You know what I mean? And I think for me, the real like standout is Clancy Brown, but I mean that's just like Clancy Brown, where do you even begin to talk about Clancy Brown's, you know, ability, yeah,
anybody
talent, you know,
born before 1990 knows Clancy Brown is something else, right?
Yeah.
And then everybody born after 1990 would maybe know Clancy Brown as Mr. Krabs and have no idea about this other life that that he had as an actor.
Yeah, no, I mean,
fucking getting most of his head chopped off and then walking around 1980s New York with ring piercings to keep his head.
No, like he just has like this amazing presence to it. I think the filmmakers did a really excellent job of casting somebody in this sort of lead role, sort of the guy that's kind of telling all the stories, the Crypt Keeper, quote unquote, right?
Crypt Keeper, yeah.
So he's the one kind of relaying all the stories, and he just has this like recognizable voice, and there's so much like menace and layers to it. That was the thing like jumped out at me like right off the bat, like that I really thought was really cool.
And something to like a testament to his I mean, I guess he's not really that old. He was born in 59, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they start to do some extensive makeup to make him look old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, he's not that old, but...
No, yeah. And
I mean, his skin must have been way too smooth and nice, so they wrinkled him up like crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess it's also part of the story.
I think the movie itself was... It's a fun movie. It's an entertaining anthology. I think it's a movie that, like, takes a lot of familiar like narrative beats, but I think it like tries to like spin them around a little bit, like to kind of break convention, which I thought was really fun.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was really kind of interesting. And I can't say enough about like the art direction and the production design was wonderful for a movie that I think was
It was so fun.
That was probably like not like studio. They didn't probably didn't have like studio money. That was probably they made it very like low budget indie kind of horror movie. I thought it looked fantastic. Like I really liked the aesthetic of the movie. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, and very fun. And kind of what you're like, what we were talking about, this whole if you're not particularly in love with one story, like you get more chances.
Mm-hmm.
I think is made fun of sort of after the first story, right?
Yeah, the main character.
Like it's made fun of. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's fun, because I was like, oh, okay, that was okay, but it was just like a little taster, right? It's like I don't remember the last time I saw like an anthology series that gave you like a little taster story.
Yeah.
Before. Like something that wasn't a part of the beginning or the wraparound, you know? Because the closest you get to that is what? Twilight Zone with Albert Brooks and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you want to see something really scary? And then Albert Brooks pops out at the very end again.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job with a lot of different genres. Like, Creature, body horror, you know, kind of stories. I think they did a really cool, like, inversion of, or, like, and I think each one was supposed to take place at a...
Like, slasher thriller.
Slasher thriller, yeah, yeah, definitely the last one. I think they're supposed to take place, like, a different decades, right? Like, we start, I believe, in the 50s, right? The first story, and then we kind of go through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, like the type of movie that was popular.
Well, I think they all start. I mean, because the story right before the one that involves our lead, the one with what's her name, Sarah Hay, right? Is that her name? I'm pretty sure it is. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, I'm pretty sure her name is Sarah. Yeah, Sarah Hay. I really like Sarah Hay only because she came out in one of my favorite TV episodes of all time for Room 201, right? Is that the name of the show? The Duplass Brothers sci-fi show about the motel room that all these stories keep happening in. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. Sarah Hayes is really cool. She was just like a dancer. I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. And I recommend it if anybody hasn't seen it. It's really
cool. Okay, I'll check it out. I haven't seen it, so I'll check it out.
That one, they show some dates, and it says 1958 or something like that.
Right, yeah.
And I have to say that they all have to take place at this time because... Clancy Brown is telling all these stories to this young lady that wants to get a job there, right? There's like a wanted thing out front. And they're all there in the funeral parlor. Mm-hmm. So I'm just assuming it's got to be like 58-ish.
Mm, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it tackles the genre that was popular in that decade. I think you're right. It does. Oh, it does take... Yeah. I think it does. The stories... are all set more or less in the same time frame, you know what I mean, like you're mentioning. But I think the way the story genre that it takes is kind of like influenced by it goes decade by decade kind of deal, I believe.
I see what you say. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you get a lot of like variety in the movie, you know. And spoilers, we can go story by story and just knock it out, see how we feel about each one, you know.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, you got to wait for that. And that'll be next week.
But yeah, do you have any other thoughts before we go into spoilers?
You know what? No, not really. I already want to talk about all these stories. There's plenty to talk about.
Excellent. All right.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
Spoilers. So Clancy Brown dies.
I mean, I said there can only be one. There
can only be one, yeah. Yeah, that was a twist I didn't see coming, especially the latter half. With the so the setup is like one of the there's somebody applying for the job, and then she's like Clancy Brown is like basically trying to tell her all these different stories, and then in the end we find out that the last one was a killer. She was the murderer.
The young lady that was applying for the job. But he also does catch her, like, she's obviously trying to like take a peek at something, and I think it's that kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to take her his tooth, because I guess that's like a tooth fairy thing, right?
So I don't know. Yeah, the last one was like a sort of a twist on the babysitter, you know, slasher,
yeah,
genre, you know.
And also, I forgot that the whole Clancy Brown wraparound to me was very Clarence William III doing Tales from the Hood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're very right. Yeah.
Which is also a great film if nobody's seen it. Like, very relevant. I think we've talked about it before, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first story, I want to talk quickly about the first story, which I thought was really simple but effective, you know, like kind of Lovecraftian little story about a woman pickpocket, and she tries to break into the medicine cabinet, right?
Medicine cabinet, yeah.
And there's like a squid tentacle little guy there is eating it.
And, you know, the squid tentacle gave her plenty of chances because the squid kept pulling on the door, right? Like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, yeah, I like that whole, she doesn't run and she doesn't scream because she doesn't want to like alarm the thing in the,
mm-hmm,
in the medicine cabinet, yeah, which was like very effective.
Yeah.
But you know, you're at home, and in my head I was like, you dumbass fucking run.
Yeah.
You could at least open the door and then people would know that you're in trouble. But yeah, I was like, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was quick. It was simple. And it was a very like a tasty little treat before you get into the course.
Yeah, same. I feel the exact same way. I thought it was a fun little kickoff story. And then we get to the sort of body horror portion of segment.
Which, I mean, it's, that one's pretty much up there as like my favorite one. It's just a lot of social commentary, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
But I was going to say, for that first segment, I thought it was like real nice and clever. At no point were you bored or were you uninterested about what was going to happen because it was so fast. Mm-hmm. But it was really just two shots, right? It was like just back and forth. You don't get the walls because she's in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, well, I'm not sure where they shot it, right? But very limited space to do what they're going to do. It's a bathroom.
Right, yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's fun. That's cool.
No, that.
Yeah, the body horror thing. Oh, my God. With, what's his name? Jacob Elordi, right?
Yeah, I didn't know who this guy was, Elordi. But my fiance told me, he was like, oh, yeah, he was in the Kissing Booth or something. I was like, I don't even know what that is. So,
oh, holy shit. Wow. So she saw the Kissing Booth movies.
Yeah.
I didn't know what those movies were until I looked this guy up, because he plays the main antagonist in Euphoria.
Oh, I'm not watching that either. I'm just completely.
Yeah. So that's why I was like stoked to see him, because in Euphoria, like, holy shit, he's so good.
Wow. Okay.
And I also just appreciate actors that, so they do like a talking segment at the end of each Euphoria episode, if you want to watch it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they interview like some of the actors.
Mm-hmm.
And like this guy, God, like, I mean, well, you see him shirtless for a second. Like, that's like a very prominent thing about his character in Euphoria, because he's kind of got the same idea of like this elitist sort of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays a mean fucker, like real mean. And then they do like the Q, like this thing, and he's sitting there and he's like fucking twiddling his thumbs, looking down, like he's like coward, like he's making himself as small as possible, like not on purpose, right? He's just talking.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, okay, this fucking guy, like, he's an actor's actor. Very Australian too, I think.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that he wasn't American.
Australian.
And in this one he plays like sort of similar. He's more of a charming asshole basically.
Yeah. Charming asshole that used to be fat. I did really like that part of the story too. It's like that. Like, it's true. Like, I thought it was well written, this one segment, this whole idea of he feels entitled now because he finally gets what he wants because he's like hot and fit, but it doesn't give him the right to do what he did.
Nice.
He essentially rapes this girl.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets what's coming to him.
Yeah.
Which was so disgusting and funny. Like, this is probably the most... I mean, the whole movie is very dark comedy, but this one's like the darkest, I think.
So we're talking about, you mentioned it earlier, the exploding penis. Now, I was of two minds. When I first saw it, I was like, oh my God, that was so unnecessary. But the more I thought about it, I've come to the conclusion that I think it works because you need that. You need that big gag. You need that release for the story, right? Like, because we're building to that moment, right? And then, and once he becomes pregnant with like a demon baby, I'm not sure who she was per se, but
right, or who they
who
were.
Who they were, in, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
That once he's pregnant, he goes back to the house to look for her, and she, they tell him, like, you know, it's like where the guy decides to ask, like, where is this going to come out? Because
it was like the same place it went
same
in.
Place it went in.
Yeah. Which is true for like the whole birth, the whole science behind birth for women, you know?
Yeah.
It's a fucking miracle that they can like squeeze out a fucking baby. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if you've had sex with, you know, I mean, maybe we should talk about this, but you know, like the biology, like it's amazing that they can do this.
Yeah.
So if this is what it was supposed to be for, like, if a man could give birth, it's like, well, it is what it is.
Like, yeah. So this exploding,
you know,
dick was very cathartic.
I don't know. But I thought that was a clever. Yeah. Also, yeah, because he was trying to plead at the end.
Yeah.
And then I just like that each of them are just rolling their eyes at him like, shut the fuck up, dude.
Yeah. Just.
But I do like. She takes this baby, like this, these two other characters that you get introduced to. I don't think they have names, but the woman that is trying to, or grabbing the baby from this like pile of mush because he exploded, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Is trying to tiptoe and put this baby in a new crib. And then, you know, you finally get a feel of what the room is and it's very dark and there's a bunch of cribs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in other words, it's not like this character whom, you know, got this guy pregnant. You could assume that there's just so many men like him that kept doing the same thing, pretending they're going to wear a condom. 'Cause what happens? The whole setup is he's got this like big speech about the patriarchy falling and what feminism is now. And it's like what the, it's supposed to be the late 50s or early 60s. So it's like that time period where they did confirm like a lot of men and like some women use that to their advantage to have like fucking sex parties just to fuck people.
Mm.
And he was like giving out condoms and stuff like, you know, take control of like whatever, it's your turn, whatever. And like all these people that he's talking to are all girls, you know. There's like no men at this what do you call it, shit, what do you call it when you go to college and you're getting a feel for the place, they make you do these like,
orientation.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like it was supposed to be an orientation.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long it's been since I've been to college. Ladies and gentlemen. Very long time ago.
Well, I mean, we were only like 50% sober for college, so
yeah. That's right. So he's doing this thing and clearly he's a part of a fraternity and they're doing these things on purpose to get these young ladies to go to these like frat parties. And the whole frat, I feel like, is based around the idea of how many people you can fuck, right?
Yeah.
Because that seemed to be like a big deal at one point.
Yeah.
And he gets introduced to this girl because of that other awkward character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who I thought was really fun. He was real effective.
I thought he
like for what he did.
He was one actor that really stood out. Like what he was doing, like and, you know, his character and everything. He was like really well cast in that part. I really liked them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Yeah. Oh, I should mention also that all these young ladies are staring at this guy, like Jacob Elordi's character, and they all got that dreamy eye thing going.
Yeah.
You know, it's because it's like Jacob Elordi is not a bad-looking kid. And then he gets introduced to this other girl, and I like that the conversation is real quick. It's like she gets the condom, and then he's trying to make a joke like, oh, no, I just come here and do these things, you know, because I'm trying to get laid. And she's like, oh, yeah, me too. And then, like, it throws him off. So he's like, oh, well, I got a party. I'm sorry. Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently she does do that. She does go to these things to purposely find these, like, douchebags.
No, it's a great twist on the, like, douchey guy who knocks up girls in movies. You know what I mean? Like, and then yeah, just sort of inverts it a bit. It was really well done.
And they always have that excuse that I think in earlier films was something that they use, was like a writing tool that they use to be like, well, you got to feel sympathy for this guy because he used to be fat or he used to be ugly or he used to whatever. Yeah. Like, that's not an excuse.
None of it matters. Yeah.
Can't get away with that shit anymore.
Yeah, for his behavior. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, so his penis explodes and like most of his torso.
Yeah.
He's turning into like a mutant at the same time. Oh, I do want to mention when he starts to really show and he's getting really sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to go downstairs, and right before that, that other character we're talking about, that actor that did really well, the like spazzy guy.
Yeah, right?
I don't know. He had mentioned like, oh, so you know, you've had 67 now. That's awesome. And he's like, that's creepy that you know that. Okay. And he's like, oh, sorry. But the reason he mentions that is because it's a big deal. There's like 67 bullshit founding fathers for this like yeah, fraternity or some crap.
Yeah.
And he goes, and you've got 67 notches on your belt, so you can finally put your like name or whatever.
It's a BS.
On
yeah.
Yeah. And there's like a shitload of them, right? There's like a shitload of these banners with different names on them. Not banners. What do you like? Flags.
Pennants or whatever.
Pennant flags. Yeah. Yeah. And he's, you know, wrapped in like a blanket because he doesn't have any clothes that fit anymore because he's like aggressively getting pregnant. And they put him on a chair and he keeps trying to say no, no, no. And then when he puts this thing up, it took me like, I think I paused the movie and I was like, okay, let me let this sink in. That can't be like his water breaking.
Nope.
And I was like, oh my God, he shot a fuckload of cum all over these guys, I think.
What the?
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, that's gross. That was funny. Because that's what I, like, took from it. I was like, what else could it be? And like, oh, I think this dude just shot a bunch of cum at them. I mean, I could be wrong.
No, I didn't get to that place.
Okay, like, they do these, like, close-ups, and it's all, like, gloop. I mean, it looks like something.
I thought it was just something that came out of his, you know, he shit it out or something. I don't know. I didn't really think that far into it, but that's actually pretty funny too.
Yeah, because it had to have come out of his penis, remember?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's infected area. Yeah. Also, I mean,
wear a condom, kids.
Yeah, wear a condom, please, guys. And also, I mean, 69 notches on the belt was right there. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
that's maybe my only like nitpick. Like, see, it's right there, guys. You said 67. Just go to just do 69. It's there. It would totally make sense for the story. And then people.
And it's also. It was like, unless this guy is like adamant about getting checked all the time, which it didn't seem like he was, right?
No, no.
Via conversations he's had.
Yeah.
And if he did. Like I said, he like essentially raped this girl, but it, you know, came back like tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's going to wear this condom that the girl's like, right, wear the condom, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. And then he like yells at her to turn around so he can like throw the condom away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming he's done that several times. So for this to be the moment, something really bad happens to him. Good for him.
Yeah.
He had a good run, a really impressive run of not getting sick.
Definitely, yeah. I think the next story was probably my favorite. It worked for me the best. I don't know how you felt about it, about the man who has his wife. She becomes...
That's the Sarah Hay one, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The where Sarah plays the catatonic woman, the she's sick or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Was that explained? I missed that part, but it didn't seem important.
Yeah, no, it just happens, right? I mean, it starts with them just like getting married and then, you know, picturesque marriage, and then it quickly cuts to like something's happened to her. She's like you said, like catatonic, and now he's basically just spending his whole life just taking care of her now.
Yeah, which kind of was real sad. I thought there was going to be some sort of crazy reveal because their neighbor, that old like older lady, mm-hmm. that kept talking about like, oh, you should do this and go on this boat. She kept mentioning stuff, and then he kept questioning like, how old do you think I am? So I thought there was going to be like a crazy reveal where he's just like a really old guy,
mm-hmm. yeah,
dealing with all this.
Yeah,
but it was still very, very cool nonetheless.
Yeah, I was gonna say like I really liked that it was. He seemed like just a normal guy who was kind of pushed to like a level of in his life to where he didn't really have one, and that he was pretty much like completely stressed because you see like he's can't pay for anything. She obviously is not getting any better. You know what I mean? He's like just not. There's no like life with her anymore. And so this doctor comes and tries to present an option, right? Like, hey, if you give her this pill in her food,
painkillers or something, yeah,
within a two in the 24 period, I think is what they said, then yeah, that will help her like peacefully pass away or something. Of course that doesn't happen, right? But
right, I do like that the entire time you feel for the guy. And you can see that maybe he like thinks about certain things, and maybe that's what those like conversations are between him and the older lady neighbor. Just like she's like living her fucking life, and she's old,
mm-hmm.
and I can't. I'm just like stuck doing this. And he also has a thing against the elevator, which comes into play later. I thought that was funny, but I don't know. Even when he gets presented the option of the pills, he's quick to be like, okay, well, whatever, thanks, okay, another pill, blah blah blah, and the doctor has to be like, no, you're not listening.
Yeah,
and then he's like, oh, I never even like, you know, hadn't occurred to me to do that. Yeah, that was cool. And then just like it's very this one I feel like had the most Tales from the Crypt sort of twists going on, where it's even when the character is trying not to do the wrong thing anymore,
mm-hmm.
the moment he decides to do something wrong, no matter how hard he tries, it's just like a domino effect. That was really funny.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Like, he did this thing, he immediately regrets it, and everything that happens afterwards, he pays for it. So,
yeah, which sucked. I was like, oh.
And I really like the escalation, you know, of like, you know, him, you know, poisoning her, and then she, like touches his hand, and then she starts convulsing. He tries to like save her.
he like, yeah, he undoes the strap that keeps her up in the chair so she doesn't fall on her food.
Yeah, right?
And he had just presented that statue of like her favorite animal. I forgot, it was like a bunny or something. I don't know, I'm getting that wrong, I'm sure, but like it was like a statue that was pointy. That's the point of it.
Yeah,
like her favorite animal, and he's able to make her throw up, and he's like relieved, right? And then she fucking falls, and her forehead falls right on top of that pointy statue. So she's got a fucking statue stuck in her forehead.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh my God, dude.
Just that one definitely worked. I loved it. I love the escalation. I like the end. I thought it was surreal. I thought it worked.
That kiss?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's just like
that kiss with her, like the elevator is falling and they're floating because it's falling. Mm-hmm. Which after the segment was done, a part of me was like, maybe none of that actually happened.
Yeah, maybe.
You know? Because mm-hmm. the whole thing is about her death,
mm-hmm.
right? And she clearly didn't look like that in the coffin. I mean, I know they're supposed to say, like, Clancy Brown is, like, the fucking... He's been doing this for, I don't know, maybe centuries, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe he's been around since... Maybe he was in Scotland in, like, I don't know, the 1700s.
I don't know.
Who knows? yeah, they're just like he went crazy at the end, essentially, right?
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Good story.
And then the little in between wraparound stuff where she's like, well, that's not fair. He didn't do that on purpose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I was like, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That was definitely a very good one.
What did you think of the last one?
And then, so this is saying, the thing says five tells, right? Are we getting all of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the story, I guess, right before the end of the wraparound is our lead story, right?
Right, right.
Where, yeah, I forgot her name already. Is it...
Always prepared. We're always prepared.
She did great, Sam, I'm assuming.
yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, oh, no, this one's special to me. And, like, she opens the coffin right before Clancy Brown's going to push the coffin into the crematorium, mm-hmm. right? And she's like, no, this one's special to me. Like, stop. I just want to, like, blah, blah, blah. And I like how, because this one caught me. I was like, oh, okay, Clancy Brown's reaction to this is a little funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, like, did, like, oh, surprised, but he didn't look really surprised.
just, yeah.
And also explained, he was like, oh. <It's> like, <okay. laughs> And then she goes into that story, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Right, yeah.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah. A sort of twist on the slasher babysitter story.
But right, yeah.
I thought it was well done. It was well executed.
Oh, wait, her name is Sam. The reason I know this right now is because the person that was supposed to be taking care of the kid was supposed to be Sam.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she's like cooking dinner. Like, that's like pretty the much weird the part, whole setup yeah. of the story, yeah. And she's not bothered by anything, but on the news or like the radio, I forgot, the television? Or anyway, something's telling them, hey, the mental asylum, a bunch of people got escaped or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and one particular person escaped, and that's the kid killer or whatever.
Yeah.
And she goes back into the kitchen, and she sees some random guy standing there. And, you know, I was super into it right away just because of how aggressive she was being. But then I was like, man, is she being too aggressive? What's going on here? And then that's when the twist happens. Because immediately she's like, she's grinding up meat in a meat grinder, right? At some point.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And she shoves the dude's hand in there.
like, yeah.
Ugh, gross.
That's something I gotta give this movie credit. It definitely tried to like, went for like, it didn't pull away with the horror. You know what I mean? They just showed Mm-mm. everything. As much as they could, right? Yeah. It was very effective.
Yeah, as much as, yeah. But yeah, that was fun. You finally get that reveal where the Sam person that's supposed to be taking care of the kids is this random dude that shows up in the kitchen. Because they don't mention why he has like a big gash on his head, but he's clearly like disoriented.
Mm-hmm.
And he's finally going to kill this, like the girl, and you're like, oh no. But she's like, you're not a killer. And he's like, oh, you're right. And he's crying. And then she fucking kills him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when you find out she's the escape convict or the escape mental patient.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So what do you think of her being sort of the new mortuary there at Raven's End?
I thought that was fun. I mean,
yeah.
If the movie hadn't presented itself in a certain way, I maybe would have thought like, oh, I don't know if that was earned. But I think after that was done, I finally got like a feel of like maybe Clancy Brown was also a bad person at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like stoked because he gets stabbed and he stays alive. And then he makes like books like fly at her saying that these are all the bad things you've done.
Right, 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 right.
And then how does she get all sliced up?
From the... whatever little creatures in the book come and eat her up.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he just walks away and he's basically saying like, it's your turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes a deep breath, walks outside and he's like, you've won McCloud. You've won. And then he just like blows up.
Oh man. Yeah, everything goes back to Highlander.
I think we can truly appreciate Highlander, yeah. I was going to say, I think we can appreciate that I'm assuming most of our target audience has probably seen the Highlander series. Maybe.
Seen the sequels, the TV show, like us.
But anything after the Mario Van Peebles movie, I just stopped.
I stopped. Yeah, no.
I was like, nope.
Cool. Do you want to give me any last thoughts?
Yes. I just want to mention, I've actually worked with this director before. We did.
Biased. No, I'm just kidding.
Just kidding. No, I mean, we did not keep in touch at all. He was one of the directors for another sort of like, I wouldn't say, well, like, yeah, anthology series called Two Sentence Horror Stories, which I think it's on WB produced it, like an actual series on HBO, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But I did not work on that one. We worked on the kickoff series that was just a web series.
Okay, yeah.
And one of his story was actually my favorite one. It was like the hardest one to fucking work on because I had to build a bunch of shit. I mean, I'm glad it looked good, but his was very cool. So I'm glad that this didn't suck. Let's put it that way. Like, okay, I was right about this guy. This guy's actually, he's very passionate about what he does.
Yeah, there's a lot of same. I think I really liked it. I think it's at times the film could be a little flat at times for me, but I think that there's definitely a very like thoughtful, very talented voice here, and the director is Ryan's Spindle, right?
Spindle,
yeah, really, really, you know.
I was gonna say he fucking nailed the casting.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. He's an interesting horror voice, so. I look forward to watching more of his work.
Yeah, throw him on Creepshow, right? The series?
Yeah, they should.
Because, Lord, oh Lord, we know that series needs help.
Yeah. No, you're right. I try to watch season two, and... Oh, boy. I'm not done watching it yet. So, I'm working my way through it.
Yeah. And there's a reason we're probably not ever going to review the Creepshow TV series, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry.
Patreon goals.
If you want us to review it, support us on Patreon.
Yeah. Show us first how to make one, and then make a tier, $100 Creepshow tier, that so we can rewatch it. Yeah. I think that's how that works.
But then also write like your dream idea of what script you want, and then we're just gonna do that.
Yeah, we'll act it out by voice. No, just kidding. Yeah. Radio program. Anyways, so Mortuary Collection. How many sexy spooky bones do you give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones.
Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you're doing. Sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie. Yeah, I'll go there. I think I'm gonna give it 9.
Whoa.
Sexy spooky bones.
Dang.
You gave me an anthology series, I'm gonna fucking rate it high. Oh wait, that's actually circumstantial, I think. But
yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. I'm going to give it 6 sexy spooky bones.
Nice. Very good.
Alrighty. Thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Wear a condom.
Don't get your dick exploded. All right.